calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman is winging his way back to the United States after a weekend in Germany. He's the hardest working guy I know and the only person I know who would only go to Europe for 3 or 4 days. And I'm Peter B. Collins. Happy to be sitting in for Tom again today. We've got a great show lined up for you wherever you happen to be listening on Sirius Satellite Radio on one of the great AM stations around the country, including my flagship radio station, KRXA 540 in Monterey, California. And however you happen to be linked up with us, I'm glad you've joined us. I'm logged into the chat room. I see Narlodius, one of my old pals from past radio episodes, is logged into the chat room at tomhartman.com. So feel free to communicate with me any way you like. The toll-free number to call the program is 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-THOM or 8466 if you prefer the digits. Coming up next hour, Jeffrey Feldman, who's a regular on the Tom Hartman program, will join us. He takes a look at framing, the way issues are talked about and presented, and there's a lot framed out there these days. We'll be talking with Jeffrey next hour. And Brad Friedman, who runs bradblog.com, one of the people who is fighting hard to protect our rights to free, fair, and transparent elections in this country. He'll be with us in the third hour of the Tom Hartman program today. But first up, we go to the state of my birth, the state that I left as a young man because it's a Republican machine state, the great state of Ohio, and once again, I am sad to say, we must sound the alarm that constitutional democracy is under siege right here in America, right in the Midwest in Ohio. Bob Petraeus is on the ground there in Columbus where the O is optional. He and his colleague Harvey Wasserman operate freepress.org and maintain a vigilant watch on our voting rights. And HB3 is of great concern to us today. Bob Petraeus, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Glad to be on.
Well, it's nice to talk with you.
Circumstances.
Indeed. I woke up this morning and opened my email, and here was an alert about House Bill 3 in Ohio. And just when we thought we had seen it all, Bob, the 2004 election gamed and stolen and you know, riddled with fraud, and then they turned around and the referenda that you voted on in November of this year had stunning, unbelievable results in the published election numbers. And now this House Bill 3 would essentially lock down Republican control of the electoral process in Ohio. Describe the key points of this measure, Bob.
Well, there's a variety of one. It's going to require what they call positive identification before anyone can cast a vote, which will affect at least 17% of the state, and in certain demographics, elderly, handicapped, figures are as high as 59%. And, of course, it's obviously going to make sure that the homeless don't get to vote or those in transition.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they had done already in Georgia. Also, in the bill, there's going to be no affirmative mandate to the state to actually go out and provide these positive identifications, like a driver's license. Nor is it required that college students who live in the state and voted in record numbers, that their IDs will be, in fact, counted, even if they're at a state college.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already specifically said there's no intent to use private college IDs at all, like Kenyon College, which was a bastion for Kerry supporters.
And we know this ID requirement, photo ID as it's described in some cases, is a pet project of the Republicans. James Baker brought it forward in the Carter-Baker Electoral Commission that gave us its report a few months back. And while on the face of it people say, gosh, we want to prevent electoral fraud, in fact there isn't much electoral fraud of people going and trying to substitute their vote for an individual they do or do not know.
Well, we checked the entire state because there were all these massive claims of voter fraud, and what we found is only five incidences where somebody was turned away or suspected, out of more than 5 million voters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, really minimal. Although there's been an orchestrated campaign directed right from the White House to make this the issue. You recall that Thor Hearn, a co-counsel for the president, came into Ohio in March at a hearing by Congressman Ney. He, on Thursday, in a post office filing in Texas, had created the American Voting Rights Institute with a PR guy from the Republican National Committee, who now works for Dick Cheney. On Friday, they sent out a press release on voter fraud, and on Monday they testified that the key problem in Ohio was the NAACP paying people in crack to register to vote. So this is a totally orchestrated racist campaign that comes, I believe, from the highest levels of the White House.
We're talking with Bob Fitrakis in Columbus, Ohio. He fights for voters and for the credibility of our elections. He's a political science instructor at a local institution there, and he also has declared himself an independent candidate for governor, something the New York Times failed to mention when it recently covered the prospects for the race to succeed your tainted Governor Taft next year.
Well, you know, a part of that is the question if the if the Democrats are unwilling to fight on this issue, I will. And it also will give me standing to sue, because I think unless they're sued repeatedly, and the evidence that we have really came out of the election challenge, which House Bill 3 now makes it, there's no provision to challenge a federal election under Ohio law.
Well, we wouldn't need to, because with the electronic voting machines, Bob, everything's handled. You know, why would anybody want to look back at the digital records, because they're just going to be the same as the data that was entered in the first place? You also point out in email that I received today that voter registration activities could be subjected to prosecution under the new HB3 terms in Ohio, and also that the cost of any citizen-requested statewide recount would go up by a factor of 400%. That's a multiple of five. This is amazing.
Sure. That's their solution, is that since they couldn't count on rigging the recounts, that's still in court coming up in August, essentially what they're doing is making it prohibitive. So instead of paying a standard fee, $10 a precinct to recount, now you've got to pay $50 a precinct. So statewide, that means you'll have to raise more than $500,000. So a lot of the stuff you're pointing out is that it's virtually impossible to have a statewide registration campaign. You have to register in every county, and every one of those counties can require you to come in for training. So you can see the problems. A lot of these Republican rural counties don't really do much in terms of voter registration, or if it will, it would be only on the county level. But if you wanted to do a statewide drive and you end up getting signatures from outside a county, you could be subject up to felony convictions for conspiracy to commit vote fraud.
Bob, who is the author of this legislation? What is its current status?
Well, in the Senate, this is House Bill 3, which came out of the House, but there's a Senator Coghlan who has issued a substitute bill. The problem was, is last week, nobody knew what was in this bill. Harvey Wasserman and I had written about it in a book because we knew it was coming forward, and we knew it would probably come forward right after the election, as you pointed out, which had all sorts of irregular results. It's almost as if everything they do illegally, they then codify into law. It's almost like we shouldn't point out what they're doing illegally in some ways, because they'll just make it legal. So what happened is there's a substitute bill, but it was 396 pages long or so.
Mm-hmm.
It's a moving target. From day to day, we don't know whether they're going to disenfranchise felons or eliminate all oversight on the voting machines.
And for our listeners, where can they weigh in and let legislators know that we do not want this kind of a lockdown of voting rights in Ohio?
Well, there's a variety of things. Obviously, they can go to the Google the Ohio State begin to look at the Ohio State Senate. The vote is scheduled for tomorrow, December 13th.
No, we better get to work right away.
And I think the last time they were stopped, when people all over the country and indeed the world began to bombard them with email and ask them why essentially they're disenfranchising people who don't have IDs and why they're making it so difficult to register people to vote. And they're leaving the election voting machine oversight up to the Secretary of State. And people will recall J. Kenneth Blackwell's atrocious record. So there's nothing in the bill that mandates oversight of the public of these machines.
Bob Petraegas, thanks for joining us today. He's a candidate for governor. He's co-author of How the GOP Stole America's 2004 Election and is Rigging 2008. Get on the horn to legislators in Columbus, Ohio today and say no to HB3. We'll take your calls next on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Day by day, I hear the voices rising, starting with a whisper like it did before.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, coast to coast. I'm glad you're listening. Tom has the day off. He'll return tomorrow. I am your humble substitute host, Peter B. Collins, originating in San Francisco today. And I'm just about a mile from San Quentin State Prison. And I have to say that the nerves are a little edgy here in the Bay Area today as we await word from Arnold Schwarzenegger's office about his decision on the fate of Stanley Tookie Williams, a founder of the Crip Street Gang, a man who's had a much publicized change of heart in prison, claims he has rehabilitated himself. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the governor makes this decision. He is really under fire from his political base, the conservatives, and I think they want him to put this man to death tonight at 12:01. And I think that Schwarzenegger does have a real hard time with this issue. About a previous execution, he said that in Austria, where he grew up, capital punishment was just a no-no. And so for him, he said he has to think with his Austrian brain and with his American brain, which is a bit of a scary image for me. I want to open up the phone lines to hear from you today on any issue. You can talk about the situation with electoral rights in Ohio. They're about to evaporate further based on our conversation with Bob Petraegas. And I have a few other topics that I'm going to bring up here in the next couple of minutes, but you're welcome to bring forward one of your own. This is a wide-open forum, and our lines are wide open for you. Toll-free at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466 is the number. Where, oh, where is Hillary Rodham Clinton? And where is she in relation to the rank-and-file members of the Democratic Party? Dan Baltz has a piece in today's Washington Post, headline, Hillary Clinton Crafts Centrist Stance on War. And I think Cindy Sheehan put it best. Anyone who is on the fence on this issue should not be. And Cindy Sheehan has said she respects those who support this war. And clearly she respects those who do not. But to be a straddler, to be in the middle, at this point in time, particularly after the courage shown by Jack Murtha in the House, causes me to wonder, where do you draw the line between caution and timidity or lack of courage? And I'd like to know your thoughts. Can you support Hillary Rodham Clinton for re-election to the Senate in New York next year? Can you support her for president in 2008, given her muddled and often pro-Bush positions on the war in Iraq? Well, if you're ready for your minimum daily adult dose of irony, We must credit Arianna Huffington, a born-again progressive. You know, when I first met Arianna Huffington, she was married to Michael Huffington. They spent $30 million plus trashing Dianne Feinstein and trying to rent the Senate seat in California for Michael Huffington. It was a disgusting, mudslinging race. And then Arianna dumped Michael. And she has come out, I think, as one of the leading progressive voices in America today, and I have great respect for her. Last week, she penned a tongue-in-cheek column at the Huffington Post. And it reads, HuffPo exclusive. Secret memo reveals Hillary's red state strategy for 08. Hillary Clinton's attempt to rebrand herself as a red state-friendly DLC Democrat, Bush on brains, continues with her decision to sign on as a co-sponsor of the Flag Protection Act, which makes it illegal to desecrate the American flag. Its stars, stripes, and triangulation. But according to a top strategy memo leaked to the Huffington Post by a senior and, we underscore here, wholly fictional Clinton official, this is only the beginning. Here's how the memo reads. It's from the Hillary Rodham Clinton Red State Street Cred team. Good news. Our internal polling is going through the roof over HRC signing on to Bennett's flag-burning bill. Our focus group feedback shows it's perfect. Have it both ways positioning. We get to be pro-flag and anti-constitutional ban at the same time. So let's build on this. How about Defense of Marriage Act, the sequel? HRC proposes an amendment to Defense of Marriage Act making it mandatory for gays to marry. Or, how about the shoot-on-site border patrol? A red state threefer. We score points with anti-immigration crowd, national security crowd, and the NRA crowd. How about defense of the Second Amendment? HRC introduces bill to make possession of a concealed weapon mandatory when voting or getting a driver's license. And the list goes on. So tell me your thoughts about Hillary Rodham Clinton. Can you support her for re-election to the Senate? And do you support the notion that she'd be a great candidate for president in 2008? Get on the line right now and let's talk about it. 866-440-TOM is the toll-free number nationwide. 866-440-8466. Also coming up, we'll talk about the Iraqi Constitution that could disintegrate right after the vote is taken. On the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Eddie Rabbit? It's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in. And Tom left his iPod on shuffle. I don't know all these tunes, but that one kind of sounds like Eddie Rabbit. I'm just not positive. We're taking your calls. Any subject is up for discussion. You can call with any viewpoint. And we welcome callers of all stripes. So if you happen to be a conservative listening to the Tom Hartman Program, come on forward. Share your views with us. It's toll-free at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. Skyler's up in Rome, Georgia. Hello, Skyler. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, thank you. I just think that Hillary Clinton is not a very good choice for president. She's basically dividing the Democratic Party down the middle. The mainstream Democrats in society have taken an anti-war stance against the war. We're trying to propose plans to get us out of there. Hillary Clinton and Joe Lieberman are the type of people that are dividing our party, and that'll ultimately be the defeat of the Democratic Party in 2008 because they're basically going against mainstream America and showing America that we are not a strong party on national defense, which is going to be a key issue in 2008. And that's precisely why I don't think that Hillary Clinton is a good idea for a candidate in 2008.
Well, Skyler, I hear what you're saying, and I echo it. I think that we have seen courage on the part of Senator Murtha, and he gave other Democrats, including these centrists in the Senate, in my view, a moment where they could pivot politically, where they could say, you know, I've been thinking about this, and I believe that the intelligence was cooked or hyped or, reshaped in order to lead us to a certain conclusion. And, Skyler, I can still hear Hillary Rodham Clinton in the Senate debate in the fall of 2002. And she said, and I consider it a fatuous remark, she said that she was voting for the resolution authorizing the president to engage in war in Iraq because it was the best hope to avoid war.
Exactly. She's not. She needs to sit down and reconsider if she's in line with the correct party. She doesn't go with the Democratic platform in a lot of areas, such as gay marriage, abortion, the war. And basically, like I said, she's showing America that we are not a strong party on national defense. And in order to win in 2008, we have to be able to show the country that we are strong on national defense. That's why I support Democrats like Nancy Pelosi and John Murtha, because they're showing people, hey, we have a plan to get us out of there. Vote for us. But then we've got people in the background like, Joe Lieberman and Hillary Rodham Clinton that are saying, we need to stay in there, we need to stay in there. No, we don't need to stay in there. There's no real hope. There's no real plan to get us out of there. We're fighting a losing battle, and that's why I think it's important that we pick a candidate that's going to have a plan and going to introduce a plan to the United States in 2008 that's going to get us a successful exit strategy from the country of Iraq.
And, Skyler, the Liebermans and Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, Congressman Steny Hoyer, the number two person in the House, in my view, these people, I respect that they have a different point of view from Murtha or Pelosi or from the Out of Iraq caucus led by Barbara Lee and Lynn Woolsey in the House. But
yeah.
They are doing a lot of damage these days when they trot out the language of the Republicans. And next hour we'll talk with Jeffrey Feldman about this. They're using the framing that is supplied by Bush and Rove and, researched by Frank Luntz. And so the cut and run, the precipitous withdrawal phrase, I've heard that come out of the lips of Democrats. And when they do that, they are shooting themselves in the foot. They are undermining the position of the Democratic Party as a realistic opposition party to the Republicans who control everything right now. And if there's going to be any hope of, reducing or eliminating Republican majorities in the House or Senate, it's going to take a Democratic Party that is savvy and knows what the stakes are of this struggle.
And we have to be united. I mean, the thing is, the party right now is not united in the state that it stands in. It's because of people like Joe Lieberman and Hillary Clinton that we are not united. I mean, I do think, we had a good last week with, the whole, we've had a good week. And then here we've got Joe Lieberman and Hillary Clinton coming out saying, we don't support this. We don't support them. They don't speak for us. Well, the thing is, that's why we didn't win in 2004. And if we keep this kind of progress up, it's, oh, well, let's have two or three people that are completely opposite of the party, then we're going to actually not win again. But I think right now that people in this country are disappointed with the Republican leadership. Nothing has really been accomplished. I mean, we're in debt, everything's going bad right now. And I think that, the Democratic Party needs to come out with a platform that's going to get us out of the war, that's going to get us out of this deficit, and then it's going to lead us forward in the progressive movement that this country needs to see that we have not been experiencing under the Bush administration.
Thanks a lot for your call today. I want to move along now to Chris in Salinas, California, listening to KRXA 540. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, I have to agree with your caller you just had. He almost covered most of my points. But Hillary Clinton is and the DLC is a cancer on the Democratic Party. And we have to identify these senators and congressmen, and we have to get them out of office. And I support what MoveOn's doing and not supporting anybody who's not for pulling our troops out of the war and to remove these people from office because they are not Democrats. I mean, we haven't passed anything. I mean, I know that the Republicans run the Congress and the Senate or the House and the Senate, but what we've passed is tort reform and all the other bills that so-called we've performed the people's business. And Harry Reid even said that. And I'm like, no, we didn't. Everything that's come out of there has hurt the average person. And the Democrats have voted for this stuff.
Well, in far too many cases, you are right. On late-term abortion, 18 senators who call themselves Democrats, including two women, voted to support this phony and unconstitutional pandering by the Christian right in this country. and the list goes on and on. The bankruptcy bill, it's shameful how many Democrats voted for that bill. And, you know, we really do need to see a change. Now, let me ask you this. When you look at these centrists and when you look at their positions on the war, is it fear? Are they afraid to challenge the Bush administration because they've seen the smear campaigns applied to people like Joe Wilson? Are they afraid because their polling shows that if they just stand there and look presidential, that the Republicans will self-destruct and then, you know, they can just step forward and the American people will embrace them? What do you think the motivation is, Chris?
Well, I think, for one, I don't agree that they're even centrist, but I believe that all they care about is just self-preservation. They do anything that looks as if that will put them back in office, and that's it. I mean, that's all they care about. They do not care about the American people. They care about whether or not they're going to be a senator or a congressman.
Chris, thank you very much for calling today. Now to Linda in Covington, Louisiana. Hello, Linda. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter B.
Hi, Peter. Nice to hear you on the air.
Why, thank you. Good to hear from you.
I used to listen to you every single night. I was the one who you did the show on the electronic voting machines for.
Uh-huh. I do really remember. That's a few years back.
Yes, well, now it's past Katrina and everything else. We got a big hit here.
Are you doing all right personally?
Yeah, they replaced my roof, and the inside's not fixed yet. My main problem is the 4 acres of downed trees that my insurance won't pay for.
Boy.
Yeah, well, c'est la vie.
Well, I just want you to know we're thinking about you this Christmas, and I know it's going to be a tough one for a lot of people along the Gulf Coast. And just know that despite the way Washington is treating you, Americans all across the country do feel your pain and want to see the government help out in a big way and not just, of course, hand off cash to some hand-picked cronies.
I know that. I know that they do. What I want to say about Hillary, well, the other three callers said quite a lot, but even though Bill Clinton did not deserve that Monica bomb, okay, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are so far to the right, and I think they might as well call themselves Republicans. Bill lobbied for NAFTA, and look at what it's done. Now we have CAFTA. They've done everything they can to destroy the working class and the middle class in this country. They don't represent us. I will not vote for Hillary. She's too conservative for me. She's worse than Joe Lieberman.
Don't you understand?
I just hope she doesn't get the nomination.
Don't you understand? There are really only two gene pools in the United States from which we can draw presidential talent. The Bush family of Connecticut and Texas, and the Clinton family of Arkansas, and I guess Hillary's originally from Illinois. Those are the only two dynasties that we can choose from. Don't you get that?
No, I don't. I guess it's happening, but I don't want it.
Me either. I mean, come on. There's so much talent in this country. And we sit back and wait for the next millionaire or self-promoting opportunist to surface. And
well,
we've got to retool and say, look, who could really best serve the current needs of the American people? And we've got to choose our leaders on that basis, not on, you know, who they are, what their name recognition is, or if they've managed to straddle so many issues that, you know, there are enough people who might support them on a broad basis. You know, we've got to really stand for something, and this is what failed the Democrats in 2004. John Kerry did not have clear positions. And the muddling really cost us in a big, big way. I want to thank you for the call, Linda. Nice to hear back from you. You can join us, too. Tell me what you think about Hillary Rodham Clinton as a future standard bearer for the Democratic Party. Get on the line now, toll free at 866-440-TOM. 866-440-8466. On the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, the time will come up when the winds will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing. like the stillness in the wind before the hurricane begins, the hour that the ship comes in.
It's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins. Did a little shopping over the weekend, and there are some Dylan gifts in my shopping list this year. I really enjoyed that PBS series that took us back into the early years of Bob Dylan. And I'm going to share some of those tunes with my loved ones this Christmas. Maybe you will, too. Peter B. in for Tom Hartman here. Lines are open if you want to join us at 866-440-8466. That's 866-440-TOM. And I just want to pause for a moment to acknowledge the passing of two great Americans who couldn't have been more different. Senator Eugene McCarthy was a courageous voice who led the opposition to the Vietnam War when it was least popular. He passed away over the weekend. And Richard Pryor, a painfully funny comic. Painful because he experienced so much pain throughout his life, and the cocaine didn't help him. Gonna miss Richard Pryor. He made a real impression on many of us, and you can't imagine that people like Chris Rock would have surfaced without mentors and examples like Richard Pryor. To your calls we go. David's on the line from Asheville, North Carolina. Hello, David. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, Peter. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, thank you.
Good, good. I want to make a couple of comments. I was a lifelong Democrat before I finally saw the light and saw that the former so-called Party of the People was beginning to sell out the people. This was in the mid to late 90s with the advent of the Democratic Leadership Council. The right-wing, I might add, Democratic Leadership Council. Now, they're called moderates by some, but the political spectrum has moved so far to the right, Peter, that I refer to the Republican Party as the fascist now and the Democrats as the right-wing. We actually have a Democratic Party now that's to the right on many issues, including many social issues, to the Eisenhower administration back in the 50s.
And, David, I want to get your view on this because many of these DLC Democrats say they have no choice, that if they want to hold office, if they want to win elections, that they have to appeal to a group broader than the Democratic base. I think they're wrong. That's the argument they advance, and how do you respond to it?
I believe they're absolutely wrong. I agree with you, Peter. I think the reason that they've lost their base and they've lost people that used to support them is they sold out those basic core values of working people, of the environment, of health care for every American that is dear to all of us. And I used to have some respect for Bill Clinton until in late 1999, I'm an American Indian brother, he refused to grant a clemency, which he had earlier insinuated that he would grant to the proud Lakota warrior, Anishinaabe warrior, Leonard Peltier,
yeah,
who has been in prison for more than 24 years. Instead, here's what he did. He gave pardons to his crooked business buddies from Arkansas and left Leonard to sit there and rot in Leavenworth, and I will never forgive him for that.
David, to return, I agree with your point there, but to return to the DLC,
right?
My view is, and let's go back to ancient history, all right? The summer of 2004, mm-hmm. The Democrats convened in Boston, and there was this pledge not to attack the Republicans, and only in prime time did Al Sharpton violate that pledge. It was a serious mistake.
Good for him.
But then they went on to try to box in the progressives of the party and say, hey, Michael Moore is here, but don't listen to him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted us, those of us who oppose the war and have, you know, a much more aggressive, progressive agenda, to sit down and be quiet and just say, look, the only way we're going to get Bush out is to pretend that we're not quite as dangerous, not quite as conservative as he is. Because, you see, we have to woo these swing voters, these people who call themselves independents. We have to win over some people who voted for Bush last time. And I don't disagree with that as the goal, but how do you get there? You don't get there by being Republican light, by being the number two corporate party.
Right,
you
on.
Get there by standing up and saying, we won't permit a bankruptcy bill like this to go through. We will not permit a pandering unconstitutional measure like the ban on late-term abortions to go through simply because we know it is a loaded issue. We're going to stand, and if we lose because we stand, at least you will know what we stood for.
Yes, I agree. Very, very, very to the point and right on the money.
Let me jump to another call here. Let's go to Greg in Mount Shasta, California. Hello, Greg. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Peter. How are you? You and I know each other from back down in San Rafael. I have such strong opposition to Hillary Clinton because of her position on the voting machine issue. In 2003-2004, I was webmaster for verifiedvoting.org, and it gave me a very close view from working with the various legislators' offices in Washington as to what these people thought that we should do about the voting machine issue. Well, every time Hillary Clinton got her hands on a deal on this issue, she would give us the most watered-down solution of anybody out there trying to do something about this. Clinton's bill refused to get rid of the secrecy, the copyright protection of the voting machine software, for example. She refused to make the voter verified paper trail equivalent to a ballot. So that it was the legal record.
Greg, I got to wrap you up here, but I take your point and I understand the issues there. We've got a lot of work to do before I could support Hillary Rodham Clinton for president. Thank you for listening to this hour of the Tom Hartman program. We'll continue. You can join us on the telephone. And Jeffrey Feldman will talk about framing as we kick off the next hour. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman returns tomorrow. Sitting in once again, I am Peter B. Collins in California. I'm glad you're listening wherever you happen to be, coast to coast. And you can join our conversation toll free. It's 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-THOM. Or 8466 if you like the digits better. Coming up next hour, Brad Friedman. He runs the Brad blog, and their primary focus is on voting issues, as you may have deduced. I think these are some of the most critical things that we face as a democracy. And I just find it deeply ironic that this president gives us these pep talks. There was another one today about the bright future of democracy and freedom in Iraq. And it's going to produce the quote-unquote victory that America is seeking before we bring our troops home. And it is so detached from reality, I just have a hard time figuring it all out. And Jeffrey Feldman is going to help us with this just a little bit. He studies framing and rhetoric and language, and he runs the website frameshopisopen.com. Jeffrey Feldman, welcome to the Tom Hartman program today.
Thanks, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again. And can I vent here just a little bit?
Absolutely.
Can you be my therapist for a minute? As you know, we talked recently on the program that I host here on the West Coast, and I was stunned by what I call the Ricepalooza torture tour of Europe last year. And the coup de grace was watching the news hour on PBS on Friday night. It was framed entirely on the terms set by Rice and the administration. And just in very simple terms, Jeffrey, what I witnessed was they permitted the discussion to be circumspect and only around the issues that Rice raised in her series of speeches in Europe. And they did not let reality intrude, because at almost every stop last week, as she was saying, we do not torture, we don't dispatch people to torture, we don't transit them through European airspace or airports. Almost every day, somebody surfaced to challenge that in a very direct and credible way. The Italians threatening to indict 20 CIA operatives for kidnapping somebody on the streets of Italy. A German who came forward and established that he was taken under a mistaken identity issue and tortured in Afghanistan and then just released on a dark road late at night in Macedonia. And then finally, we heard from Al Libby, who has acknowledged that under torture administered to him in Egypt under the rendition program we claim does not exist, that he coughed up what they wanted to hear, that there was, in fact, a connection between Saddam and 9/11, which, of course, is false, and he now acknowledges that he lied. So that's my rant, and I just can't believe that, in particular, the media has permitted Rice to establish this on her own terms, which are at odds with reality.
Yeah, it really does seem that the media has lost its way in trying to find an alternative way to talk about these issues that Rice is trying to really frame in terms of these concepts of initially, you know, the complete absence of torture, which is patently false, and then the other arguments which come out of Alberto Gonzalez is tortured / convoluted logic about the president being able to do anything that he wants to in a time of war, this notion that the president cannot do anything unlawful so long as the United States is in some kind of war. It's amazing, too, that it's not just the media, but it seems that both political parties are really struggling to control the administration on this issue. I just watched on Sunday an interview on Meet the Press with Lindsey Graham, a prominent Republican senator from South Carolina, in which he seemed to be saying that he was struggling in his negotiations with the administration to get them to back down from this relentless desire they have to give the president unlimited power to absolve anybody from international agreements on torture, all under the premise that torture leads to information. And that's really the frame that's holding this discussion. It's something that I call the ticking bomb frame that has captured the American public in this very, very troubling logic that when we get our hands on a suspect, which is anybody that Dick Cheney points his finger to, really, we have to get them in a chair and subject them to extreme interrogation methods so we can get the so-called information out of them that's going to prevent the bomb from going off. But as you just mentioned, in the case of the Egyptian suspect, that information is almost never reliable. But even in response to that criticism, the administration has marched out people who are now talking about examples where torture did produce reliable information, of course, all of which is very, very suspicious. So it is extremely troubling.
And here we have a nominal leader of the Republican Party, John McCain, trying very hard to maintain a relatively pure position. I mean, his torture amendment ban is relatively unambiguous. Yet we see the Democrats are choosing their words carefully, and many of them seem way too cautious on this issue. And then, as you point out, people like Lindsey Graham are there saying, you know, I think we might need this.
Lindsey Graham was the first time that I ever saw a Republican get extremely emotional on this issue. John McCain, for his part, is trying to pass an important piece of legislation, but it seems to lack the emotional punch that we get from the administration. John McCain is trying to get one set of rules to be passed for every single government administration so that there aren't individuals in these secret agencies coming out of backwoods parts of the CIA who are mysteriously exempt from these regulations. McCain wants all the rules about torture in a book that's distributed to everybody. But it was really Lindsey Graham who for the first time showed his frustration, and he was saying that these provisions about torture that the president wants to reserve are not about getting information. What's at stake here is the separation of powers. That's what's at stake, that the president wants to be above the law, and Vice President Cheney is working behind the scenes to make sure that the president has that power. And it really is very, very frightening. We saw a senior senator in Graham who seemed nervous that the president was about to seize hold of power that was going to really put us in a lot of trouble globally.
Well, and again, it is just so obscene to see this maneuvering and lobbying and arm-twisting that is going on for a policy that is so bankrupt and so fundamentally un-American.
But look what happened to John Kerry. The other day he came out, and he also seemed to be a little bit confused on how to go after this. He apparently talked about soldiers who were conducting behavior that was tantamount to terror in and of itself. Kerry trying to reach back to a voice that he had during his protest age during the Vietnam War. But again, not able to make the case to the American public why torture is dangerous, not just to our government, but to our attempt to bring safety and peace back into the world.
Dr. Jeffrey Feldman is our guest. He is the proprietor of the website frameshopisopen.com, and I invite you to stop by. There's some very powerful information and analysis available there. Jeffrey, just a couple of minutes remaining in the segment here. I want to turn to the president's pep talk again this morning. I heard excerpts of it, did not get to watch this speech. But he keeps, you know, pretending that Santa is going to bring democracy to Iraq. And this flies in the face of reality once again. Kanan Makia wrote a powerful and lengthy op-ed piece in Sunday's New York Times, which basically declares that this Constitution is a recipe for disaster. And the promise the president makes that just around the corner, just at the end of this week, that these elections are going to produce peace and stability and a participatory process in Iraq. You buy any of this?
I don't buy any of it. What the president is trying to do is frame this issue in terms of something I call the path metaphor. He doesn't want Americans looking at what's going on the ground right now in Iraq. He wants everybody looking down the road, 6 months ahead, 8 months ahead, because that buys him time to come up with some type of plan to respond to the deep, deep anxiety that the American public has. The path metaphor is always what the president uses when they get into trouble, trying to throw attention off of the deep troubles that are in the here and now and get people to look ahead to some fictional time period when everything seems better. It's not going to work. People are getting more and more anxious. They're thinking about the Christmas holidays, empty chairs at their Christmas and Hanukkah tables, and I think that the president is digging a deeper hole for himself.
And now he has a new guru. Peter Fever is a political scientist and polling expert from Duke University, and he's the one who wrote that 35-page press release all about the strategy for victory. And they claim that this is a document that's been in place for several years. Only Dr. Fever only joined the Bush administration team about 6 months ago. And when you look at the file of the origins of the strategy for victory, it came from Dr. Fever at Duke University. Jeffrey Feldman, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk with you. You got a lot of good information.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Visit his website, frameshopisopen.com. And I want to hear from you. Do you share my views about this detachment from reality? How could PBS report on the Rice tour and eliminate all of those inconvenient people who surfaced directly contradicting her assertions? Give me a call. 866-440-TOM, Peter B. Collins on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, coast to coast. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for his Tomness. He'll return tomorrow, and we'll get back to your calls in just a second at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. Ellen Ratner joins us from inside the Beltway at the Talk Radio News Desk. And Ellen, I just have to start off by saying that I spoke last week with your brother Michael, who is a great American at the Center for Constitutional Rights.
Well, I'm very, very proud of my brother Michael, and I think he does incredible great work, I guess is the correct English. And we're all very proud of him in the family. Even the right-wingers are proud of him.
Well, that's great to hear. So you got a chance to review the president's speech from this morning. I heard snippets of it. Can you tell me how many times the word victory passed his lips?
Well, you know, what has happened is this is the latest salvo by the White House is to use the word victory as much as possible. And I don't know if you happened to read Frank Rich's column yesterday in the New York Times.
Sure did.
But I have to say, that was probably one of the best Frank Rich columns I have ever read. And what they did by, as he said, using a few keystrokes is to find out who really wrote that Iraq victory policy that they handed to us at the White House several weeks ago.
Dr. Peter Fever.
That's right. And what, of course, this guy is a political analyst at Duke. He has nothing to do with war plans. And what we're seeing today is exactly the same kind of discussion that happened in his speech. He's first of all saying that he would go back. He made this speech in Philadelphia before the World Affairs Council, and then he took some questions, and he said that he would have made the exact same decision again, because after 9/11, that was one of his goals. One of his goals was to go after Al-Qaeda, and the other was to go after Iraq. He said that the entire world had the view that there were weapons of mass destruction, and that that this was, you know, not just something that the United States believed at the time. He then also spoke about Iraqi deaths, and he said that, you know, the same thing he's given before, which is we haven't completed the job of training the Iraqis, but we're beginning to happen to see our troops step back from the fight. And, of course, anybody who knows what's really happening on the ground knows that we're not really equipping the Iraqis with what they need, because we're afraid that if we give them armored vehicles that they're going to wind up in the insurgents' hands. So what you have is Iraqi police officers going in unarmored little white, you know, little white cars all around, and they're not very capable of fighting it, because you can't fight insurgency when you don't have the proper equipment. And in fact, as you also read in Frank Rich's article, the Iraqi military says that they don't have the equipment to fight that what's needed.
Mm-hmm. And I heard in the excerpt, I heard the same tired phrase that when the Iraqis stand up, we'll sit stand down, not
that's
sit
right.
down.
That was written by one of his message crafters in the White House.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure, been Frank Luntz tested and decided that they think that one is a winner. But I'm kind of sensing that the American public has heard all this stuff before, and the polls show that they don't believe Bush anymore.
Well, he's been able, either through the economy or through these Iraq speeches, and this is the third of four Iraq speeches. The fourth one will happen on Wednesday, right before the Iraqi voting. But this is the third speech, and it has his points have gone up a couple of points, from 38 to 42 on one poll, and I suppose that's good. But you figure 42% still is a terrible. I mean, basically, you have the hardliners plus a few stragglers in terms of his approval rating.
Well, and the shift is still within the margin of error, so you're talking about essentially still the same numbers, and the president's popularity has not increased. His negatives have not declined. Ellen, anything else you can tell us about this?
One last issue on that issue, which is that the White House has taken people, I know these people, I've worked with them, has taken people who were message people on Social Security. They moved some of those same people to be message people on Katrina, and now they've pulled them to the White House to be message people on Iraq. And why? Because that's where they really feel the message needs to be in terms of his popularity.
Well, they're messaging like crazy, but there's no content there. And I think too many people are sensing that. And it'll be very interesting to see how all this plays out.
Knock on the door and proverbial nobody home.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Let's jump quickly to Jim in Pittsburgh. He's been holding forever. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you much. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is tomorrow it's on the agenda that the Patriot Act will be passed on. And we who have been fighting the 16 provisions have lost most of what we've been fighting for. 14 of them are gone, and we're down to two, which is the national security letters and article and section 215, which invades your privacy. Now there is Russ Feingold and a bipartisan group of senators have said that they will have filibuster because the compromise between Sensenbrenner and Specter is not enough, and if this goes through tomorrow, you can just take your Article 4 of your Bill of Rights and just scratch it off because it will no longer have any validity. So
thank you for the alert. Let's support Russ Feingold. He can filibuster, and I hope he will. More of your calls coming up after the break. You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. I'm Peter B. Collin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartmann.
It's the Tom Hartmann Program, and I'm Peter B. Collins. Delighted to be sitting in for Tom, who will return tomorrow. We're taking your calls on various subjects, and you can join the dialogue at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466, or log into the chat room at tomhartmann.com, and you can join the conversation there. Dean is next from Seattle. Hello, Dean. You're on the Tom Hartmann Program. Welcome.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. At least you didn't say thanks for taking my call, because I go ballistic when people say that.
Right on. Well, I just want to maybe turn you on to something. I don't know if it's, you know, I'm no complete expert, but I have been studying this stuff for a long time. But I believe that Hillary Clinton is part of the drug and Bush crime family. And I believe she does all the, or helps do all the money laundering through Wall Street, through all the drug dealing that the CIA does through America. And that's the reason why she's in New York. That's the reason why Jeb's in Florida. That's the reason why Arnold's in California. They have every one of the states, even Texas, controlled where all the drugs come in.
Well, tell me, I'm very skeptical. So tell me what you base this on, Dean.
Michael C. Rubert, he's a 20-year beat police officer, and he's even confronted the CIA about drug dealing in California.
Rupert, right? R-U-P-E-R-T?
Yeah. Cop versus CIA.
Are there two P's in Rupert?
I believe so.
Yeah, I believe I've interviewed him before.
Yeah, and I also, you know, I mean, since 9/11, you haven't heard much about any cocaine busts across the border or any drug deals through the borders, have you?
Well, there was just a big story out of Colombia recently, you know, about the coca trade.
Right, but nobody's ever got busted since we've been tightening up our borders. All right,
I can't cite an example, so I'll take your point. Go ahead.
Okay, let me go at a different example. What in America do we make money off of? What do we build that we make money off of that we're actually selling to Americans? What are we actually making money on?
Software.
See, what I'm pointing out is the Colombian drug lords will buy, let's say, 100,000 SUVs all at once with cash. I want to start up my car dealer business in Brazil. Here's the cash. Will you buy it? And they do it. And that's the only thing keeping America running right now.
Well, Dean, I am a guy who is open to a lot of things, and I don't rule a lot of things out just on the face of it.
Yeah.
And, for example, you know, going back to the 1980s, there are all kinds of stories about what was going on at the MENA airport in Arkansas and how much Hubbard had to do with it.
Correct.
And so, you know, I don't dismiss this out of hand. I have to say that I haven't seen anything that substantiates the kind of angles that you're describing.
Right. Okay, now let me give you another example, okay? The only drugs you're ever going to hear about in America, ever getting in trouble for, is marijuana and speed. And those are two things that crazy people in America can grow in their own house. I mean, at least with speed. They're crazy. And that's the only reason why the government busts those people. All the other ones are ran through the government, through the police forces in every single major city in America. And that's why you'll never, ever hear about them ever getting in trouble.
Well, we do have this ridiculous situation where it's now, you know, much tougher for somebody with a cold or allergies to get Sudafed. And it puts a very minor dent into the meth lab operations.
Right,
in this country.
That's something somebody can make in their home, and that's the reason why they bust those people. All the rest come through our government's borders.
All right, Dean, thanks for sharing. I don't quite embrace your views, but I appreciate you bringing them forward here. Let's see who's been holding the longest. David in Seattle, you're next here on the Tom Hartmann Program. Go ahead, David.
Wow, what an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's not that great a deal, but thank you for calling.
Oh, it is for me, though. You guys are awesome. I listen to you guys every morning, and I love California, by the way, even though I'm in Washington.
Thank you. Come on down for a tourism visit, because we're broke, and we've got this Austrian-born action movie star playing governor. Buy some T-shirts, maybe some crab on Fisherman's Wharf, you know. Go to Hollywood and buy some bad logo stuff, whatever it takes, please. We need your help.
I'm so glad you guys are still talking about the torture thing, because it's so deeply disturbing. And I feel that it's revealing a much wider, strategy, not just for the Democrats, but just progressives, Greens. I mean, any open-minded, sovereign American, for crying out loud. I don't care what party people belong to. I don't care if they're from effing outer space. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the vote fraud, the insane foreign policy, domestic policy, these blatant human rights violations. I mean, should disturb everyone.
But, including conservatives. Where are the real conservatives who should be fighting for the fundamental values of America? And torture is not one of them. That is not something we want to export into the global village, friends.
But they think that they're waiting for Jesus to show up. And if Jesus doesn't show up, God's going to blow up the earth. I mean, it's on the fundamentalist Christian radio networks. That's all they talk about.
Well, it's a big business. The end times are a huge source of revenue. Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series has sold millions of copies, and he, of course, is tightly wrapped up in Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell's world.
Yeah, and we need to not only expose these people, but I don't even know what it's going to take to mobilize all Americans, on multiple issues, because the torture thing is just going to blow the lid off, I think. And not only that, I don't feel that enough is being said about the 25,000 private warriors that are supposed to be working parallel with the U.S. military, and they're not.
And our Hessians?
Excuse me?
Our Hessians, the mercenaries that we have deployed?
Yes.
And what is your point about what they're not doing?
Well, they don't have any chain of command. They haven't given any real pieces of information as to what their real agenda is. All the focus is on the U.S. military, support the troops. And yet the private contractors not only are given every weapon they can possibly dream about that the military doesn't have, and they're doing whatever they want. In fact, the weapons dumps that were abandoned after we invaded Iraq, that was watched by the UN weapons inspectors, they left at once the invasion started. Where do those weapons have gone? I think all of these so-called suicide bombings that have been happening every single day for the last 2 or 3 weeks. We don't see any proof. How do we know that they're suicide bombers? It could be planted by the private contractors to make themselves look better. I mean, I'm not saying that it's happening
that,
or it's not happening. It's because the...
Well, I'll take your point that we have very little oversight of these contractors, and there isn't much transparency. So we, as the people who are footing the bill for this, really don't have much of an idea about how they operate and to what extent they are under command and control of our authorities and to what extent they are simply freelancers.
That's right.
I thank you for the call, David.
Thank you.
We go to Robert in Statesville, North Carolina. Hello, Robert. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. This is Peter.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for your intelligence.
You're breaking up, Robert. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Hillary Clinton, I don't think anyone that signed on to invade Iraq can win the election on the Democratic Party.
I hope you're right. I think you're right.
I think Wesley Clark, you have to get somebody out of the beltway. We had a great candidate before, but he didn't have any personality. Was Bob Graham down in Florida.
He certainly won me over with the book he wrote about the intelligence operation and with the way he campaigned in the presidential race. I really think John Kerry should have selected him as vice president. He
Absolutely.
Would have carried Florida, and he would have given the Kerry-Graham ticket some real contrast with the Bush-Cheney ticket.
Absolutely, absolutely. I met. I'm the president of a Democratic club in Charlotte County, Florida. I'm on my way there now, and I'm really ticked off at the DEC, the National Democratic Party, because we have a great candidate down there in Mark Foley's district, and I'd love to kick him out of there because the only thing he's ever done for a veteran is he for the Iraq War veterans. As he made a graveyard, veterans' graveyard, and we have a turncoat Republican that the Democratic Party has that they're backing for the 16th district down there. I mean, all we want to do is cut the middle of the road all the time.
It's not going to work, and we have seen the point of diminishing returns of this centrist strategy. It started in 2000 with Al Gore. And, you know, if anybody needs to be hit over the head again, look at what happened in 2004. Democrats will not win by straddling and compromising. Democrats need to take clear positions that show the contrast with Republicans and show the American people there is a difference. And if that happens, I believe that the base of the Democratic Party will expand to the point that the Democrats can win national elections and critical federal races on the state level. It's not going to happen if they just keep parroting Republicans and come across as the number two corporate party or Republican light. Robert, thank you for your call. More in a moment. You can join us toll-free at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. On the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Take a deep breath, feel like you're choking. Everything is broken.
A musical interlude from Mr. Zimmerman, Bob Dylan. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom. He'll return tomorrow. And you can inspect him for yourself, see how jet-lagged he is, returning from Europe after a whirlwind visit there. And I'm delighted to be here. There's a line open for you if you'd like to talk with us. 866-440-TOM, toll-free, 866-440-8466. Next, we'll go to Rebecca in Seattle. Thanks for your call, Rebecca. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi. I would like to go back for a moment to Condoleezza Rice, the discussion about Condoleezza Rice.
Yep.
Okay. My husband heard a commercial for Time magazine that said that she might be Person of the Year, and I just there are so many reasons not to have her be that person, and I'd like to urge people to write to Time magazine, letters to the editor, newspapers, everything they can, and just point out the mistakes she's made so that that would help to maybe...
Well, now, I'm not sure exactly what your husband heard, but at this time of year, Time magazine usually does a tease campaign where they dangle the names of Paris Hilton and Condoleezza Rice and, you know, El Baradi, who won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, okay, thank you.
And so
that.
I don't know that you can take that as any indication. My own personal choice to me is very clear. Mm-hmm. Cindy Sheehan is America's Person of the Year.
Absolutely.
I mean, can you think of anybody else, any individual who had more of an impact on the news and on policy this year?
Right. I agree with you. And a friend of mine was there. Karen Chase, daughter of Representative Marilyn Chase, was there, and she's very active in our local Democratic Party here, actually on the north end of Seattle in Snohomish County. And anyway, we're very active in election reform, and so I was interested in that kind of bizarre comment about Hillary Clinton, but I am thinking about election reform in those states. And how Florida really, you know, everybody says it, and we have the evidence now that it was stolen. And what troubles me most about the Bush administration is that everything that's happened has been illegitimate. Almost everything that they've done that's harmed us has been done illegitimately. and there seems to be no way to undo it. And even delay in Texas when they got the extra seats from gerrymandering that, you know, the state, it was all illegitimate. And it seems like there should be some way to undo what was done illegitimately.
Well, Rebecca, there's one thread that is common to all of the issues you raised, and it is the abuse of one-party rule.
Yes.
And if there's any single lesson that America needs to draw, we can never permit one party to control both houses and the White House and the Supreme Court all at the same time.
Because they are above the law. They think they are above the law. And
well, that's where we've got to start. Mm-hmm. And this Alito nomination coming up, I hope, will once again cause Americans to see that, you know, what Ralph Nader said in 2000 and again reprised in 2004, that there isn't a dime's worth of difference between the two parties.
Yep, totally.
I'm sorry. The Democrats have a lot of weaknesses, and I'm not here to promote them or to tell you that they're perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a difference between the two parties, and the Alito nomination hopefully is going to bring that forward.
Yes.
And while I'm not hoping for a filibuster, I don't want Democrats to rule that weapon out.
I don't either.
They've got to keep that powder dry.
I was on the phone banking team against Judge Roberts, and I'm even more concerned about Alito, but mostly not because of Roe v. Wade, but because of corporate personhood. They are corporatists, and that is the most dangerous thing hanging over our heads right now.
Judge Alito wants to make it safe for each of us to have a machine gun at our house, and, you know, that's going to make America safer. Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Thanks.
Now we go to Ward in Valdosta, Georgia. Hello, Ward. You're on the Tom Hartman program. This is Peter B.
Yes, Peter. This is Paul.
Okay.
I share the concern of most people. I like to identify myself as a conservative, but I'm not inept.
Okay.
There was a little rant and rave this morning that I wanted to share with your audience. The Bush administration has already been paying journalists to print stories favorable to their policies.
Yep.
I guess they can rename Fox News Pravda and pretend it's not a state-run propaganda mill.
Well, it's close to it.
It is. And you know, the thing, I sent 95 faxes to Senate asking them to reject John Roberts because he was down there helping Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush in 2000.
And Paul, I don't recall any Democrat on the Judiciary Committee bringing that up during the hearings.
No, and it is sad, but I sent 95 faxes suggesting that George wanted him precisely because he would legislate from the bench, as Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia have been doing.
The only activist judges that Bush can support are the kind of people who pulled the election for him in 2000 and who support his unbridled power in the so-called war on terror and in their misguided detention policies at Guantanamo and elsewhere.
Well, they ruled 5-4 in 1998 that money's free speech and free speech is access protected by the Constitution on behalf of the Republican parties. And I called Mitch McConnell's office at that time. I'm originally from Kentucky. I'm a retired GI. And I suggested that was the same philosophy as a downtown Cairo, Egypt prostitute 4,000 years ago or Valdosta, Georgia today. Get the money right, you have access. But I said you just drove a dagger through the heart of Abe Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
Yes, we know what you are, and we're just haggling over the price. Paul, thank you very much for joining us today. Nice to hear from a self-described conservative. We'll take more of your calls in the next hour and visit briefly with Brad Friedman, the proprietor of bradblog.com. So stay tuned here for more of the Tom Hartman program. I'm Peter B. Collins. If you want to join us, 866-440-TOM, toll free. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
It is the Tom Hartman program, coast to coast on great radio stations and on the internet. However you're hooked up with us, I am delighted. And Tom Hartman will return tomorrow at this same time on these same stations. And in the meantime, I want to thank the Bicoastal team that supports the production of the show. Dan and Alex in New York, David in Portland, and I'm here in San Francisco today. If you want to call the program, you can call us at 866-440-TOM. That's toll-free, 866-440-8466. We'll get back to your calls in just a moment. But for an update from the world of electronic voting, here is a man who's on the front lines trying to protect our rights and ensure that we have honesty and transparency in our elections. Brad Friedman is the proprietor of bradblog.com. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Peter B. How are you, my friend?
It's always good to talk with you, and we always have too much work to do. You're a very busy guy, and you blog 24/7. I wanted to just let you know that we kicked off the program this morning talking with Bob Fetrakis in Columbus, Ohio, and this House Bill 3 essentially presents a potential lockdown of GOP control over the voting system in Ohio. And Bob and I touched on most of the elements, but one of the things we didn't really get to talk about in detail is that this House Bill 3 exempts electronic voting machines from public scrutiny. This is quite alarming, is it not?
Yeah, it certainly is. It's extraordinary. And I think that the Republicans in Ohio may be feeling a bit emboldened after that, the November 8th election, which I'm sure you talked about with Bob Fetrakis. And what they're doing right now is really gutting any chance that Democrats will have ever in that state to gain control. It's remarkable what they're doing and what they seem to be getting away with. I understand that the House Rules Committee, the Democrats simply walked out of the hearings because there was just no time given to their side, and the Republicans seem to be steamrolling this legislation through the House.
And I got an email about it this morning. I read on your blog last week about the brave Ohioan who is conducting a hunger strike in Columbus in the middle of winter there. But this has gotten very little attention in the so-called mainstream media.
I think that the mainstream media, as you know, does not pay attention at all to these issues that are so important to our democracy. It's quite remarkable. So then you come to an issue that seems to regard Ohio alone, and I think they see it as even more localized, not realizing that similar bills are being moved forward in various states around the country, and perhaps not understanding the importance of Ohio to the national presidential scene and so forth. No Republican president, I believe, has ever won the presidency without winning the state of Ohio. So it's very important what goes on in Ohio, but as usual, the mainstream corporate media is asleep at the switch.
Yeah. Now, turning to the situation here on the left coast, Brad, you and I have been following closely the fortunes of Diebold, an Ohio-based company that started out making safes, and now they're one of the three biggest companies that make these touchscreen voting machines and electronic tabulators as well. What is the current state of Secretary of State Bruce McPherson's review of electronic voting machines? He's got the deadline under the Help America Vote Act, as all election officials do around the country, to meet its criteria as early as January 1st.
Right, and there is a scramble in California and, of course, across the United States now to finalize these deals with these voting machine vendors, these private vendors, so that the states and counties will get this free federal money from the Help America Vote Act. And California is in the process of deciding whether to recertify California after they did a big test on the Diebold touchscreen machines over the summer and found that at least 20% of the machines failed. And now, almost miraculously, McPherson, for some reason, is considering recertifying Diebold. And activists have called for a test, a hack test, to be moved forward by a fellow by the name of Harry Hursty, a Finnish computer security expert who, in fact, hacked into the machines in Leon County, the same Diebold machines in Leon County, Florida, successfully without leaving any audit trail whatsoever. And they are still negotiating with California on the parameters and the ground rules that will be used. Diebold, of course, wanted to prepare the machines themselves, specially prepared machines for this hack test. And Hursti and the folks at Black Box Voting, who have been working with him, you know, would, of course, like to use instead random machines that were already used in various elections around the state of California. I'm hearing that the negotiations for those parameters may have broken down. And so it's not clear right now whether that hack test is, in fact, going to move forward. State Senator Deborah Bowen has a petition that folks can sign at Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Bowen, B-O-W-E-N.com, where they can send a petition encouraging McPherson, in fact, to allow for these hack tests. And though it seems to be a California issue, it's really not, because what happens out here is going to affect states and counties around the country when they say, well, look, California has certified these Diebold touchscreen machines. If it's okay for them, it's okay for us, because they had this huge test, showed that there was problems, and now I guess everything is okay because they've certified them. So folks around the country should stop by DeborahBowen.com and send in a petition demanding that McPherson allow these hackers to test these machines.
McPherson is with us here on the Tom Hartman program, and Brad, at BradBlog.com 2-3 weeks back, you first reported a story from the San Francisco Chronicle that this Finnish gentleman, Harry Hursti, would be coming to California at the behest of the Secretary of State to do one of these hack tests. And then you reported that the Chronicle had been wrong about that. It appears that they floated the idea but forgot to send a ticket to Mr. Hursti.
Yeah.
Is there any plans? Is that hack test back on track in any way?
As of now, it is not. As I say, I believe that for the moment, in any case, the negotiations have broken down. I'm hoping that they get them back together, but there is no set date that I know of at this time. And you're right. In fact, San Francisco Chronicle and others, I believe AP, had also reported it based on information that came out of the Secretary of State's office when they announced that this hack test was going to happen on a date specific. However, you're right. They didn't bother to apparently inform the person who was supposed to be performing this hack test.
Just amazing. Just amazing. Brad, one of the other issues you've been blogging about is related to Texas, to Tom DeLay's gerrymandering that was fueled, of course, as we know, by what appears to be tainted money that violated Texas law. That's the basis of the indictment that he is fighting right now. And one of the interesting issues is that the career staff counsel at the Department of Justice in Washington very clearly stated that they believed that DeLay's moves violated the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And their cries were ignored as the political leaders, then John Ashcroft, steamrolled and supported DeLay's issues on the redistricting in Texas.
This is an incredible story, and it's been a bit of a sleeper because it seems like pieces of this news keep coming out on Fridays, and so it sort of gets buried over the weekend. But yes, indeed, what is happening is effectively the George W. Bush administration has gutted one of the most important provisions of the beloved Voting Rights Amendment, which is 40 years old this summer. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Amendment requires states around the country that have a history of disenfranchisement to get preclearance for new election laws in their state. In other words, when they create new laws that have to do with elections, they have to submit them to the Department of Justice, who then will say whether they are okay or not, whether they will disenfranchise minorities, etc. And in both of these, I'm sorry?
Go ahead, you're fine.
In both of these cases, in Georgia, where they had a photo ID requirement at the polls, and then the Tom DeLay case you mentioned, the redistricting of Texas, in both of those cases, the professional Justice Department staffers and attorneys in the Voting Rights Department had recommended against these laws. And nonetheless, political appointees from the George W. Bush administration had approved them anyway. In the case of the Tom DeLay matter, 8 out of 8 of the staffers and attorneys who looked at this redistricting map said, no, this will disenfranchise minorities. We will not recommend it. And the attorney general overrode it and approved it anyway.
Just amazing how politics works. Brad, I want to thank you for your work. I want to direct people to bradblog.com. He's on the front lines of protecting our rights to honest elections in this country. Brad, we'll talk again soon.
Thanks. We'll have some breaking news on Diebold today.
All right. Watch that space. 866-440-TOM here on the Tom Hartman Program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Moving down the highway, you can hear the engine humming. Coming down the byways, you can feel the motor running. See the smoke horizon, though it's blowing like it's cold. You can hear the whistle screaming. Moving down the road, I gotta start moving. Hey, you know I'm wasting time.
21 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins. Happy to be getting your calls here. Toll free at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. Lots of issues up for grabs, and I'm going to get right back to your calls now. Looks like Ed's been holding the longest from Aptos, California, and a frequent caller to our flagship station, KRXA. Hello, Ed. Good to talk to you.
You forgot to mention the Vice President of Marketing.
Yes, and he is VP of Marketing for Aptos and a retired airline pilot.
Not to toot my own horn.
Yes.
One correction to Brad. He said free federal money. The federal money is not free. We pay for it with our federal taxes. So it looks apparently it's money that if you don't use it, you lose it on a state-by-state basis.
Yes, I understand your point. Both of you are correct. It's taxpayer money. It's not free. But from the state point of view, it's money that's coming from the federal government if they jump through a few hoops.
I wanted to respond to the people that were talking about the DLC and said, you know, we should completely purge the people supporting the DLC out of the party. I think that's a little bit short-sighted. I think maybe they, once if we can get control of one of the houses of Congress back, then maybe that should be on the priority list. But I would
think Ed, nobody authorized me to speak for progressives, but that won't stop me. And I'll say this, that as a progressive, I am willing to coalesce with members of the Democratic Leadership Council. I do not reject centrists or business interests being a part of the big tent of the Democratic Party. What I do object to is when leaders like Evan Bayh suggest that those of us in the progressive part of the party are hurting the party by being ourselves, by speaking our truth, and by fighting for our values. And I don't say that about the Democratic Leadership Council. I don't say that they should leave the party or that their views should not be heard. I simply don't believe that they should dominate. I think it should be part of the internal struggle for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. That's healthy.
Amen.
All right. Thank you, Ed. Let me move along to... I want to move to another caller. I'm sorry you can call me this afternoon. Evan in Olympia, Washington. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter B. Hello, Evan. Let's see if we can punch Evan up here. I'm looking at the screen right now.
Hello, Peter.
There he is. Go right ahead, Evan.
Well, I just wanted to say that it seems to me kind of moot until we settle this deal with the voting. If the vote doesn't count and you can't account for who cast their vote for who, how can you get your democratic process back in line with some of these more progressive ideas that you're talking about?
Make a very good point. And
it's moot to even talk about any of it until we can be sure that our vote is counted.
Well, I don't quite agree with that, sir. I think that we need to pursue these on various fronts simultaneously. But I do agree with you that fundamentally, if we can't trust our voting system, then we don't have a workable democracy.
It's privately held by a corporation, from what I understand, and they own the patent to it. and therefore they don't want to release the internal workings of the
source code
of the program. Is that true?
That is true.
I mean, that seems just crazy to me to have our voting system held by a private company that also has the interests of you know, the dominant corporate paradigm. And it's great that you can talk about it on this little corner of the universe, but, you know, by and large, the media out in America is not saying anything about this. So, you know, I was listening to Jim Hightower. He's talking about that the EPA wants to test pesticides on children, you know. At the same time, the White House says we can't have stem cell research. You know, these things that are just so diametrically opposed to each other are a symptom of how unhealthy our political system has gotten. And until you solve that, our only voice is through the vote. That is the only way we, the people, can speak. And when you look at the divisions in the Democratic Party, what you see is the progressives are being marginalized, and basically moderate Republicans now control the Democratic Party. And, you know, until you solve those problems, you know, for over 40 years, progressives, even longer, progressives are the ones who come up with the ideas that are going to move our country forward, make better living, create jobs, protect our environment, all those things, you know. Until you start caring about what food that you eat and what kind of community interaction you have and respecting all opinions, you know, this country is really, really up a creek. And it's so disheartening to see that we even have to argue about the right to have our votes be properly counted. And one last thing.
Yep.
I'm wondering, I haven't heard any stories, but how are they tallying the votes in Iraq? Could it be possible that they're buying machines from some of our companies? I don't know.
I don't think they're using electronic voting machines.
From what I understood, they had situations where they're just as in Ohio this last election. There were more people voting in a precinct than there were registered to vote there.
We're not even sure how voter registration's been conducted in Iraq. I mean, it's not quite a sham, but it's a show election. And if you read the op-ed piece, the lead one in the New York Times on Sunday, the Constitution basically shows this whole thing's going to blow up in the future.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Our music of the moment from B.B. King, live at San Quentin. This is a CD that won B.B. King a Grammy. And it was a benefit concert he performed for a group I've been involved with called the Freedom Foundation at San Quentin in the late 1980s. And I want to dedicate this tune to Stanley Tookie Williams.
Every day I have the blues. Every day I have the blues.
And at this hour, we only have blues, no news from the governor's office. At any time until midnight tonight, Arnold Schwarzenegger could announce that he has granted clemency to Tookie Williams, which would convert his death sentence to life without the possibility of parole. I'm sure hoping that Arnold makes the right call. But since the debacle of his referendum election, his so-called reform agenda that was shot down by California voters, 0-4, Arnold Schwarzenegger has been weaving, zigzagging down the political highway, a little to the left, a little to the right, and it's anybody's guess how he will finally determine the fate of Stanley Tookie Williams.
Every day.
Lines are open on the Tom Hartman Program. You can call me, 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today. He'll return tomorrow. Jack in North Bend, Oregon. You're next here on the program. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, Peter B.
Hi, Jack.
Peter, you know, I want to thank you for the excellent job you do, by the way, and I truly mean excellent in my view. You and Tom, there are none to surpass you as far as spokesmen for freedom and what's left of it in this country, and to try to regain all that we've lost over the last, it's only been about 5 years, I guess. And when I hear about the voting issue, and I hear today, as I learned from your show, about the actual details of even taking any check on the election away from the people as far as checking the validity of the vote after the vote is cast, I can see that they're nailing it down for 06. I don't believe 08 will even be an issue relative to the voting machine issue. I think they've already got it down pat. I think they've stolen one election and possibly two, at least partially, the first election of Bush by this method. And it's not hard to get down when you can afford the best computer scientists in the whole world who are breaking in and actually adjusting the vote in every crucial election.
Jack, we launched the show this morning with Bob Fitrakis from Columbus, Ohio, who brought us up to date on this House Bill 3, which would essentially lock down GOP control of the electoral process in Ohio. And you know, they've had pretty good control already. This just hardens it and makes it virtually impossible for Democrats or others to challenge the outcome of questionable electioneering.
Yes,
but Harvey Wasserman and Fitrakis in their book make a very clear statement that I think is worth citing here. And that is, you and I can get over a lost election, maybe even two, but we cannot sit still. We cannot stand quietly as they steal our democracy.
Well,
that is what is at stake here.
That's exactly right. That's the reason I called. And to make a long story short, you can go from 9/11. They were behind it. They engineered it for the issue of terrorism, for the issue of fear, sub-issues under that, making money in Iraq, political issues relative to a geopolitical context as far as Iraq goes for future moves and the we have the whole world angry at us. They have torn apart our democracy. They're tearing apart. They're slaughtering everything that's good on this planet that means the people's welfare. It's what people live for. They're putting fear over us in the form of terrorism in order to control us. There is only
further,
one way.
Jack, they are further discrediting the concept of democracy with the cruel hoax that it's about to take root in Iraq, in Mesopotamia.
It's all blatant lies, and it enters into the mass media political propagandist machine that most people in this country only have time to look at as far as a news source, because they're kept so busy otherwise just trying to keep food on the table and being totally into credit card debt with little savings. As far as a solution, Peter, I only see one, and that is if one person in the United States Congress be independent, like Bernie Sanders in the House or someone in the House of Representatives, will bring impeachment proceedings and start talking about it and get the momentum up for it. And I wish you would tell me sometime today or whenever I hear you again, if you have any other solution outside of this which exists on a realistic level to not only save this country as we know it, and as we know it, the opposite of what they want to turn it into is what our tradition has been in the representative Republican, which we are governed under, but also this whole world here in various ways, whether you go to the environment, whether you go to contrived wars, whether you go to fear in people and what it causes them to feel about each other on an individual level. We have literally five people who are running this world into the ground. But, man, I really appreciate everything you do. God bless you, and thank you for letting me have my say today.
Okay, and thanks for your call. I just want to direct you to the website, impeachpac.org, and it's PAC, impeachpac.org. That's Bob Furtick, and he's working on it.
I want to write that down right now.
Very good, sir. Nice to hear from you. Daniel in Santa Cruz, listening to my flagship station, KRXA 540. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. It's Peter B.
Hi, Peter. How's it going?
Good, Daniel.
Well, I just like to second what that caller had to say. I mean, it's time that we really look into impeachment. I mean, you had John Zogby, a Republican pollster, who actually asked the question, should Bush be impeached? 40% of the public said yes, and he stopped asking the question, being that he's a Republican. And then there's a couple more recent surveys that show over 50% of the public thinks that Bush should be impeached. So I think it's about time the people in the Democratic Party actually look out for what we want, we the people. I know there's people like Joe Lieberman and Evan Bayh who are probably on the payroll of the Republican Party, who are trying to...
Wait a minute.
The and they're telling us, we should fight Bush, we should do what Bush says.
Daniel...
Well, you know, I don't trust these people. I don't trust Lieberman, I don't trust Evan Bayh.
I don't trust them with the heart and soul of the Democratic Party either, but it is over the line to suggest that they're on the Republican payroll.
Well, it's hard to tell the difference. I mean, you have Lieberman, who basically wants to be Secretary of Defense once Rumsfeld's forced to leave. You know, I don't think they're looking out for us. They're looking out for themselves. And that's the problem with some of these Democratic politicians in Washington, the DLC types. They're just looking out for their own interests, the Hillary Clintons. You know, these are the people that don't really care about what's happening to our troops in Iraq. They really just are concerned about getting elected. And I think it's about time we vote for some Democrats who actually are going to look out for us and worry about what the hell is going on in this country.
I agree with that, and I think that we, as I was discussing here on the program on Friday, it is time for Democrats to really play hardball and to send a clear message to our incumbents that we will not, let me put it this way, they cannot take our support for granted, and simply because they're in a position to hold some fundraisers and get lobbyists to pour money into their campaigns, and they might consider themselves in a safe seat. We need to make them unsafe. We need to let them know that as long as they're supporting the Bush administration's agenda, either implicitly or, you know, in Lieberman's case, explicitly, that we will not continue to support their reelection. And
that's
if
right.
We can make an example out of one or two of them, and I think Lieberman's asking for it, then I think that we could send a powerful message to the incumbent first members of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, America doesn't need two parties run by the corporations. We need at least one party that's for the people, and that's supposed to be what the Democratic Party is about. Unfortunately, during the course of the Clinton presidency, that kind of got lost.
Daniel, thanks for a great call from Santa Cruz today. Next, we go to Byron, California. That's on the Delta between San Francisco and Sacramento. And Jack joins us. Hello, Jack. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, Peter B. I'm excited to hear you on the radio again.
Well, thank you. It's great to hear from you,
yes,
Jack.
Yes, I had to go into grief management program when KSFO dropped their, carrying good quality people like yourself. For us out in the Bay Area, are you back on the air again?
On the air in Monterey and in Eureka and on the Internet, and we're working on a San Francisco station.
Well, I hope you get on there. What I called about today is, I don't know if you saw the story in the Rolling Stones about this John Rendon.
Group, yes, and
right,
we interviewed the author of that story.
Right, to market the war, and just in many cases just blatant lies. And I noticed in the Chronicle it had a watered-down version of that, but they made it as if it was just telling the good news out there and trying to get the Iraqis to cover it. Now, I'm just
there's a longer piece in the New York Times. I think it's the Sunday issue about the Rendon Group, which does go into significant detail about their work, about the political connections, and there are some other PR firms that have surfaced. The Lincoln Group is the one that has been they've got a $100 million contract, and they've been planting those feel-good stories written by Americans in the Iraqi press. Rumsfeld's looking for the facts on that. As soon as he gets the facts, he's going to have an opinion, but right now he doesn't have the facts on it.
Well, the one that scared me is that some of it was just blatant lies, and they fed that to Judith Miller of the New York Times, and she evidently took it hook, line, and sinker. And that, also that there's some connection between Rendon and Chalabi.
Have
you read that?
This is interesting because the Rolling Stone article asserts, and I don't have any reason to dispute this, that the Rendon Group created the Iraqi National Congress. The article I just cited in Sunday's New York Times does not say that. They say that the CIA created the Iraqi National Congress and hired the Rendon Group to promote it. So I really do want to conduct some DNA testing, and let's establish the true paternity of the INC and this guy Chalabi, who appears to be a contender for power in these elections that are being held on Thursday. And, you know, he's a guy who can't be trusted by anybody,
least of all the people of Iraq.
Yeah. Hey, it's great talking to you. I'm glad you're back on the air.
Jack, great to hear from you. Thanks all for checking in from the Delta today, and I hope the levees hold. It's 46 minutes past the hour. There's room for more calls, so jump on the line right now. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. And I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In the dark I search again for a universal refrain, lost in lonely sea crashing waves, swimming through my revolving days.
Into the home stretch on the Tom Hartman Program today. Tom Hartman returns tomorrow. I'm Peter B. Collins. Been delighted to sit in here, and Tom never takes any time off. But if he does it again, I'll be happy to answer the call. Let's go to Mike in Seattle. Mike, thanks for holding. You're next on the Tom Hartman Program. You're
How
on
you
the
doing,
air, sir.
Peter?
I'm doing great today. Thank you.
I just had a couple things quick. That intelligence is very... what was the name of the intelligence company that was also handling the furniture for the White House?
Well, are you referring to the Rendon Group?
Is that the one?
Well, I don't know about the furniture part.
They were handling furniture and intelligence.
Oh, great.
that's really bizarre. I just don't know why the furniture thing plus the intelligence. But I wanted to get to back to Democrats. And what I just wrote a letter to, or sent a DCC begathon back to Nancy Pelosi with some money, of course. But I said in it that if the Democratic Party, if the members, she can't get the Democratic members to vote in a pack and stay away from any Republican agenda, to vote against, stand away from it, you know, the funding is going to dry up. We're going to have to split. We're going to have to split off if it doesn't.
But see, what we have to do is give Nancy Pelosi the leverage that she needs over her caucus. And it's sad to say, there are too many Democrats who are most interested in their own reelection and who are playing to what they believe is the sensibilities of their home district. And we need to nationalize the congressional elections of 2006 and make them a referendum on the war in Iraq. And one thing that could help propel this is the impeachment process. And I recognize that until Democrats get control of at least one of the houses, that impeachment can't realistically go forward. But visit ImpeachPact.org. Their whole idea is to move forward to elect a Democratic Congress and hope to support impeachment from that point forward. And even if we don't achieve the ultimate goal and Bush serves out this term, then we hopefully will galvanize the people in this country who are quite disenchanted with this president and move people in a positive direction.
Right. And I think the Democratic Party has to define, it has to separate itself. It has to define clearly what we, the Democrats, the people, actually need, all the social support and infrastructure that we need. That has to be defined and redefined, and we have to draw away from this fear and terror and tough guy Republican crap.
I agree with you, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Coos Bay, Oregon. Paul is next. Hello, Paul. You're on the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah. Hello, Peter B.
Hi.
Glad to have you take my call. I try to listen to Tom and you every day if I can. And
thank
me
for taking your
call.
Yes.
And that is, you know, if we impeach Bush, then who would be president? And then if that person, whoever he is, I don't see anybody down the line of the chain of command there that would be better. Things would just go from bad to worse, in my opinion. We need to vote him out next election.
Well, I think ultimately that's what needs to happen. Many people argue that we could go for a twofer, try to impeach Bush and Cheney, but you're right. You end up just with one of Bush's appointees down the line.
Condi, would that she be?
Well, I think it would be Rice and the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
So
Those are not great improvements,
no,
but
they're not.
At least it would be a process that would blow open the lies of this administration and shine some light on the truth, and that's the first step we need to go forward. Let me jump to another call. Ben in Salinas, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program. Hi, Ben.
Yes, referencing some earlier callers, you have Chalabi, they mentioned him. He fed all that crap to Judith Miller on the run-up to the war. Okay, now he's having conferences with Condoleezza Rice. So how does that mean good night and good luck? And I'm angry at the cowardice of the Democrats in the Congress there. I say this, the Republicans have already put it out there that they intend to put this picture out there with white flags behind it of the people that want to pull our troops out of the Iraq and let them live. I say let the Democrats act intelligent. Rush Limbaugh and the rest of the pigs are always saying we don't have a plan. I'll give you a plan. Let's preemptively put a picture up there of the Bush family and all their co-conspirators and make the background the German Bundestag. Remember those pictures where you had 24 or 35 or 40 Nazi flags hanging behind them?
Maybe Abu Ghraib would be a good background.
Yeah, put the background of those Nazi flags behind these Nazis, because world fascism is what they want. We could call
I'm out of time, but I thank you for the call. He always makes very powerful statements. That's Ben from Salinas. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for indulging me today and Friday as I sat in for Tom Hartman. He will return tomorrow, and I leave you with this question. We still don't know the answer. Will Arnold Schwarzenegger be a real man and give clemency to Tookie Williams, or a girly man and give in to his right-wing base? I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for joining me on the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.